Sports Show presents House of Rugby.
You're all very welcome to House of Rugby. My name is Moritz Rassini-Ruhl and I'm delighted to be joined on this week's show by Lindsay Peat and Pat McCarry. We had a break week from the Six Nations, but still plenty of URC action to look back on. How are we both doing?
Not too bad now.
Lindsay, you were in action yourself at the weekend. Another trophy to add to the pile.
Yeah, I like winning. I have to say, do you know what? Unexpectedly, we went down to a Masters tournament, so I was guesting with a
team. Basketball, for those
sorry, in basketball, yes. A team called Mustangs from Castlebar. So, you know, it was, you know, double win. You like to help the Mayo people win trophies.
yeah.
They'll kill me for that. But look, it was actually stacked. I met a lot of ex-teammates and players I played against when I played National League. So it was a fairly stacked tournament, but we actually came through the semi-final by sudden death free throws, would you believe? So it was very exciting.
Very dramatic.
Had a great weekend.
Did you take one?
Yeah, and I missed it. I couldn't buy a basket, Pat. I had to Google how to score in the hoop. So yeah, it was a great weekend.
Well done, Pat. Have you won anything recently?
And we were talking about Manchester United there beforehand as well. So they haven't won anything for a while as well, yeah. So no, I was saying yeah to you before we started that it was my daughter's sixth birthday, so that was kept us going there over the weekend.
Plenty of cake.
The birthday and the build up, which went on for 11 and a half months beforehand.
Like, of course.
It was a great day. And then she was born during Storm Emma 6 years ago. She thinks that she has snow powers, and she was claiming that it was her that made it snow last Friday as well. So
maybe it was. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But would you believe my son wished for snow for so long so he could get a day off school, and then he went away on Friday to Galway, who hadn't announced the snow. So he was absolutely distraught.
Yeah, well, it was cold enough. We'll get on to the games in a few minutes that were freezing that I was working at the weekend. But first, Ulster Dragons, they started their life without Dan McFarland at the weekend. And in winning form, they won 49-26 against the Dragons, scoring 7 tries. Performance aside, Pat, they needed this result and they need this positivity.
Yes, thank God Dragons are coming up as well for them as well. Just a gimme, for most sides coming up against Dragons, unless they played them away. They look pretty good. Again, it's not perfect. Like, they got knocked over their own line a couple of times, mauled over. But some of their tries were really good. A lot of offloading, and Will Addison looking good and Lowry looking good. So a bit more positivity up there. It's strange. I'm sure you guys probably covered it before, but strange to see a manager go halfway through a season. Mm-hmm. Maybe now's a good time. Like, it'd be interesting to see how Richie Murphy goes. But a few positives for them, like, in there. Like, and a lot of their kind of rugby look good, and maybe they're going back to some of their strengths as well, and maybe the shackles are off a little bit. So long may it continue. They're still not too bad, like, in terms of like league position.
That's
as
it.
Well
they had lost 6 out of 9 games in the competition before. Wow. Now, but they're still 5th in the URC, and who knows, this could be the result that sparks them into life.
It is, but I mean, if we look back historically, they're still kind of at simmering around just over a 50% win rate, I think, over the last kind of, 18 months. And Dan McFarland, though, he's been there 6 years. I think the highest he got him to was a URC semi-final. Mm. And that's not to be scoffed at because of the standard of the league. But I think we're hoping. I was definitely impressed with them the weekend. I'm not going to take away. That's the Ulster we like to see. But it is about consistency, and I'm just hoping it's not a placebo effect. It's not something about the Dragons. So they definitely look a team that were energised. Like, I mean, they scored in the first, I think it was 4 minutes, a lovely kick. Little grubber from Billy Burns to Addison, who was hugely impressive back at 15. Lowry was on the wing, and even this Lowry's first try, it went out the back. Addison got a bit of a momentum going, offloaded to McCann, who you could just see him. He was looking up, 2 balls in hand, did a switch line with Lowry. John Cooney's on the outside, Lowry's on the inside on the switch, and it was just a lovely try, and it was just such enthusiasm and energy. And even then, you know, Jacob Stockdale's coming off the bench and he's there, passes weight. All these offloads for Lowry second as well. It was just, they punch holes when they needed, they offload, they kept the ball alive, and I thought they were hugely impressive, and they looked like they enjoyed their rugby. Mm. Even like James Hume after Nick Timoney's try. He's gone up to the crowd and he's, you know, punching the air, and it's just something that was lovely to see. But I just hope they kick on, because I think the frustration has never been the standard that Ulster can play, but just the consistency of putting performances together. So look, congratulations to Dan McFarlane. You never see anyone like him to go, but something had to change.
That's it, because he was the longest serving coach that Ulster have ever had, and as you said, he got them to a URC semi-final in 2022. But looking at results from then on, they couldn't kick on from there, and he came into a sinking ship, really, and he really steadied things when he came in. But their results this season and last season as well, if we're looking back, just haven't been at the standard that you'd expect from Ulster. And that was their first bonus point win at home this season, when you consider it's against the Dragons. So as you said, you'd be hoping that they'd be able to kick on from here. And with Richie Murphy coming in, you know, who knows what freshness he might bring to the group.
Yeah, and that's it. A lot of people will be like, it's going to be interesting to see what under-20s end up there. Like, you know, will he take a couple? I'm sure he probably will. And like, I even think of someone like Cian Prendergast and Kilgallen, who's going to Munster now as well. Like the Connacht, because Nigel Carolan used to have that connection with the under-20s. He used to bring a few of them west. But now Ulster have that bit of an in then with some of those young players. Like, so if like Leinster or Munster don't snap a guy up, they'll be heading north, I'd say, as well. So, but at the same time, they do know they have to produce their own kind of talents, which is why someone like McCann and Postlethwaite playing so well at the weekend was really good for them. Postlethwaite's been someone who's been coming for a while. Like, you've heard about him a few years out, so great to see him, you know, kind of get man of the match and all at the weekend as well. And as you were talking about, some offload in there as well. So maybe the new Stuart McCloskey, if he can kind of keep on that track as well. Like, so there's a few positives for, and I just love Addison as a player. Like, so you know, if this is real wood here in front of me, I'm going to touch that, and hopefully he stays fit. Like, so and that would be a big difference for him, because I like Larry on the wing. It's not a bad option, is it?
Yeah, I think he's just such quick feet, quick turn of pace. He back with a smile on his face, and he really enjoyed it. And I think that's the thing. If the Ulster man can get back and join their rugby on a consistent basis, I think they'll be big things. Like, 49 points and a bonus point win is nothing to be, you know, scoffed at. And as I said, I'm just hoping it's not that placebo effect. You always get that with any sport and any new manager. Yeah. You know, there will be this reaction. We want a long-term reaction. Great point by Pat, though. 2 points. One, they were absolutely out-muscled by Dragons, and that's probably one side of their game that has been a consistent theme anywhere in around their 5 metre line or from kind of the 22 in. They've been susceptible to leak and tries. They need to kind of look at that being a big option to just close that off. And then it'd be interesting to see would Cian Prendergast now be maybe tempted with Richie Murphy going up, who he performed so well under with the under 20s, to kind of kick on his career, because you're hoping that you don't want injury for anyone. But I mean, the 10 situation at Leinster is absolutely ridiculous.
Sam Prendergast you're talking about. I thought you were stealing Cian from Connacht.
No. Well, how I can't get these right now is beyond me. But Sam Prendergast, to obviously with the 10 position now at Leinster, but you don't want injuries to get him his opportunity. But if he wants to kick on and try and challenge,
and if Billy Burns is going south as well,
he's going to Munster, so there is an opening there at 10. So I think it wouldn't be a bad move, and I think someone you trust there as a coach, and I think it might be an option for Sam to maybe.
Well, we'll look at Munster now. I was in Cork on Friday night and they faced Zebre and got the better of them 45-29. It was a very entertaining game, bloody freezing down in Cork, but they were against a struggling Zebre side, and as Graham Rowntree said, things that they'll want to improve on, but they played some scintillating rugby.
Yeah, some lovely stuff there, wasn't it? Yeah, I was looking at Ronan Lochney there. He was on the sideline, which I was very jealous of his jacket, which I'm sure I could wear the same jacket and it'd look half as good on me anyway, but he just has the frame to carry it off.
You're a great hanger,
Patrick. Don't put yourself down, Patrick.
I might wear it next time. If I'm invited back on, I might sit here in the Lochney jacket. But Nankivell was brilliant again. Just some of the clips, even you watch it back, and then even you see it kind of getting shared around social media. Like Snyman having the crack out there, like
he's a beast.
He looked like an NBA player. Like
hands,
Shaq was.
Like shovels.
Yeah. When Shaq was like the Lakers, like all the rest of the team, both his teammates and the opposition looked like small children, and that's exactly what people looked like for Simon at the weekend. He was just ridiculous. But then it was times where he made that break and I was like, just carried in, and he tried too much, and I was like, no. But Munster were absolutely exceptional. It was a helter-skelter game.
It really was.
I watched it. I was like, I actually can't take my eyes off the telly here because you just don't know what's going to happen here. Probably the only man who was probably really frustrated, but he got his try in the end was Shane there on the wing. It wasn't a knock-on, it was something else, and he eventually got it at the end. But Munster played very well.
Yeah, Zebra did manage to score 4 tries, and 3 of the tries came from Munster mistakes. They had 21 turnovers, 5 penalties in the last 15 minutes. It's similar in some ways to the Scarlets result, is that they got the job done, but they weren't, I suppose, ruthless enough. But do you put that down to the way that Munster played, that it's just part and parcel of it, that these mistakes are going to come because they play at such a high tempo and they play this free-flowing, offloading game?
Maybe as they get a bit more tired, or like the lad isn't there to kind of like back them up or run the support line, the passes aren't going to hand, because it was the same type of game they were playing all the way through, but then Zebra just took advantage where maybe tired bodies or something, that they were coming through and hacking the ball on or making an intercept as well. So you could even see at the end, like Ken Dellan was interviewed at the end of the match, and they seemed upset, you know, even though they had walked, you know, the first 60 minutes of the game, because they'd leaked a few late tries, they weren't too happy. But yeah, lots to build on there. Yeah, very kind of exciting games. You go down to Virgin Media Park now, like very exciting games. Like, and Ruan Quinn had a decent game as well, didn't he, I thought? And
oh god, his second try,
yeah.
That was a gift. I was like, I know it's snowing, I know it looks like it's winter, but it ain't Christmas.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know who throws that out, like, really long pass now on your 5 metre line. I was like, this is just the little chinks in the Zebra armour. But on an all-weather pitch now, it's a very quick game anyway. The only thing I was, looking at it was, like, the management of a game in the conditions. It looked pretty wet and windy.
Did they need to be a bit more controlled?
Yeah, I thought they could, like... It's like driving a car. There's times where you've open road and you can just like really open up the throttle and let loose. Like Craig Casey, I thought, was a step above. You'd really notice he was in camp. Like his the try for like Frisch's try was excellent. Like Frisch's line back against the grain, as you say, and Craig Casey just quick tap and go. Like he just wants to move it all the time, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Thought Sean O'Brien playing, like obviously he was centre with Exeter last year, and now he's playing on the wing. But he's a guy who's always looking, and that's, he still has that centre mentality where he's looking to make things happen, but he can also cut a line then on the wing and really get the momentum building. And I thought he'd another excellent game.
Yeah,
he's really, really settled. He settled into his Munster jersey very well. I said Shane Daly was probably the only man who was frustrated trying to get in on the action, and then it was just not happening. But and Ruan Quinn, to see young guys coming on.
That's it. All the young guys look so comfortable when they're stepping up to this level in Munster, because that's what they train. They're happy to make the mistakes. They're happy to try the offloads.
Yeah, and I think this is the thing. Graham Rowntree has obviously given them license to play, but I think the only thing probably he will be is 21 turnovers. It's just really, you'll get away with it against the Zebras. You won't get away with it in playoff situation. When they go back to European competition, it just won't be. And that's where the video reviews will be good, though, for them, because the 21 turnovers will bring great learnings, and it'll be something to really work on and train, and then they'll be building towards then for the business end of the season, I suppose. So it's not a bad thing when you're still coming away and winning. It's an exciting way to win. It's an exciting product to look at for the spectators. It's lovely to bring it to Cork and have fans down there experience it. But I just think, it's just probably one thing that will not get them over the line as the season goes on. Like, there's 8 games to go. There'll be tougher opposition. Yeah. And I think just the game management side of things will have to be worked on. However, look, all in all, it was an exceptional performance and win.
Yeah, it was a big night for Tony Butler, and we mentioned a few of the young players. Alex Nankivell is stepping into the captaincy role very naturally now, and he looks so strong and so physical in his performance as well. It was important for Butler that he had the experience and the calmness of Casey beside him. How do you think he did? Because it's a big time for him with Jack Crowley away.
He'd be happy with that. Like, good kick and return as well, and you're looking steady enough. And I'm sure someone like Casey, having him back alongside him, helped an awful lot, because in those kind of terms, Casey's dictating the tempo rather than kind of Butler then as well. And he's just kind of adapting to that as well. But we've talked about Billy Burns. That looks like it's, you know, apart from getting officially announced, it looks like it's a done deal. But I still think, with the amount that, like, Crowley is pretty much the Ireland 10 now. Like, so he's going to have limited time there as well, apart from maybe crunch time or European games. So Butler is still going to be needed, you know, for next season. So, you know, whether it's off the bench or something like that for him. So it's just as long as he keeps steadily developing and getting those games. But this is going to be massive for him, like this period, like, you know, that he's just had. So, it all kind of bodes well. Like, he'll stick around and then maybe he'll even be told that, because you might get put off, like, you know, an experienced player coming in from another kind of province as well. But he'll be told that, like, listen, you know, you keep playing well and, you know, Roundtree's shown that, like, if you're performing, it doesn't mean if you're like a name that you're going to get your game. Like, so, there's enough there to kind of show, like, let's, like, there could be promise for this guy next season. And then I think next season, again, you probably only see the real benefits of him kind of getting this kind of game time that he's getting. The confidence would be growing as well. So, yeah, it's all kind of positive enough. And it surprised me about Burns coming in, but then they probably just know that Crowley's, you know, he's undoubtedly the number one, like, for Ireland now. So they just need that 10 backup as well.
And another point is the players that Munster have coming back in now as we look ahead to the end of the season, to have the likes of Mike Haley, Ordie Snyman, all these players that
Mike
have been
Haley
out.
Mike Haley was brilliant.
He was brilliant. Oh, God, he was on fire. Yeah. I think Graham Rowntree said afterwards, his new hips are faster than his older ones after his operation.
Yeah, he said he was blowing after the game. Obviously, he got man of the match and he spoke
very well. Yeah,
he scored
two tries. But to have this experience around the younger players is huge for Munster. Looking at Mike Haley, if he gets a run of games together and is able to stay fit, could he be an Ireland prospect?
I mean, I'd never say never. Like, Andy Farrell is another guy who, he doesn't stand on ceremony, he doesn't stand on who you are. Like, obviously we know how underrated Hugo Keenan is, and you don't know how valuable a player is until they're missing. Now Kieran Frawley came in and he did a great job, you know, last weekend, but if you had a run of injuries in the one position, then you're kind of goose. So to deepen the squad and for Mike Haley to continue, he came up last season, Pat, you remember this on the show. Like, we spoke so highly of him because he was a central figure to how successful Munster's rebuilding was, how successful they were in the for the URC win last year. And he's just thankfully back after obviously a big long term injury to kind of reignite that question mark over him. So I would never say never. He definitely is someone who's been very, very unlucky not to be called into an Ireland camp. I think it's just unfortunate the position he plays. But if he continues the way he is, I don't see it. He's probably an outsider at the moment. But as I said, you never know when injuries, when loss of form, and, you know, he'd be ready to get a chance. But he's certainly been unlucky so far.
Connacht did what they needed to do against Scarlets at Dexcom Stadium. I'm still getting my head around that. It finished 26-10. They were in complete control early on in this game. They had three tries on the board after 23 minutes, but it took them a long time to get that bonus point. They probably should have wrapped it up before the break, but all in all, it was an important win for Connacht.
Yeah, it's a bit of a theme, wasn't it, the weekend? Like, just the Irish sides kind of getting ahead and then letting sides back into it as well. But they started, it was like, it, I suppose if they could have put it away earlier, like, you know, it would have been a lot better, but it just turns into a bit of a dogfight then in the second half. But they're a good value, like, for their win, like, but yeah, they'll probably be frustrated that, like, they, you know, they have the likes of like Muldoon and Farrelly there now in the setup. Like, they'd be kind of trying to drill home to those guys that, like, if you have a team on the rack, just really kind of take advantage of it as well. And they'll be happy that they did get there in the end. I was saying we were looking at clips back there today of that late try that they got to kind of clinch it as well. Like, because
yeah,
it was
Dennis Buckley's knock on.
Yeah, yeah. And then some of the Scarlets players themselves were taking to social media to kind of like quote tweet and stick in emojis and stuff like that. And you can kind of say, how is this missed with replays as well? But they'll be kind of upset. But the game was over at that stage anyway. Yeah. Like, there's nothing to kind of... it's not like they can say they were kind of really hard done by, even though Connacht maybe a few 50-50 calls, and I don't know, I'd call that an 80-20 call that maybe they shouldn't have got. But Janssen, with his interesting hairstyle, I'd like to get that explained. I wonder if that is a bet that he's kind of, that he's doing, or hopefully it's not something personal to him and I've offended him now. But he had a good game. And
well, you can't take it back now.
That could be edited edited. It could be edited out. And then, yeah, it's just, I just kind of like as well to see with them how well Hanrahan has just slot in over the whole season. Like, you know, it's there's no dramas with him really, and he's steady, isn't he? Like, so really helps though having the kind of the new surface to kind of play on there as well. But yeah, they'll be happy enough with that. And it's just interesting to see the three provinces all converging in mid table now, and trying to if any of them can kind of see if they can push and kick on to get into that top four. As the weeks go on, like,
it's so close in the table. Pete Wilkins was speaking afterwards about all the chances they left out there, and he said it was more down to a lack of execution as opposed to a drop in intensity. So do you put that down to the kind of stop-start nature of the league at the moment?
Yeah, possibly. Do you know, it's hard when players, like, I would have found it myself, both being in camp, do you know, with Ireland and then coming back to club, and then I'm on the other side now having, like, the players gone from club and it's not the same intensity. So you never know where you're at, you know, with test games, whether that's a break or you're coming into a new season. So I think, but this isn't a thing as well. You can give them that excuse, but probably Connacht are guilty at times of not, like Pat said, putting the, you know, foot on the opposition's throat and finishing them off. So execution is something that is a theme there. They just need to find that killer instinct and just knock them off. Because I was very impressed with Jack Ainger again.
Great break
and pass for Caelan Blade. He had a lovely, lovely quick hands for Keane Prendergast's try. And I just think some of their rugby is exceptional. Aunda Butler got his first start and he was impressive.
He scored a try.
So, you know, they're really coming good. They look like they're enjoying their rugby. But I just think, it's just now about finishing teams off and being taking pride, I suppose, in the chances you create. Do you know what I mean? And the positive thing is the chances are being created, but think how good they can be and how good that scoreline's going to look when you can finish teams off. And then we're not sitting here, you know, reminiscing of the tiny tears that Scarlets are. And I'd be in the same position, do you know, but you don't want to come down that the glass is taken off the win by this, you know, decision that could have altered the score. Do you know what I mean? So the new surface is certainly suiting them. You know, the speed of game, the athleticism of their players that they have there now. And I think JJ Hanrahan is another lad who's brought great experience and another dynamic depending on what style of 10 they want to play. So... Yeah.
They've 7 games left now from now until the end of the season, 3 of them at home. So they have Lions, Zebra and Stormers, and they really need to be targeting those home wins because it's so, so tight at the top of the table, because there's only 4 points separating 10th and 4th at the moment. And although Connacht have won more games than Munster, they're still below them on the table because of the bonus points that Munster have had. So they should be targeting full like 5 points in those games, really.
Yeah, that's but you named the first 2 teams as like win, and then
although Lions had a brilliant win at the weekend.
Yeah, actually, it's maybe it's more historic that I'm just dismissing Lions. It just depends on who they sent and Stormers
that's
as well.
They don't travel well.
Yeah, like or like what squad they send over like for that kind of game as well. But Lions. It's Sharks that are actually having a brutal season this year. But yeah, Lions look okay. Like, but yeah, they definitely target those home games. Get your 4s at least. For Zebra, like Zebra can nearly every game they're playing, they're scoring 4 tries themselves, but they're leaking 6 or 7 as well. So expect something like that again, and then pick up as much as you can in the home games, and then but try, as you said, get those bonus points. It's an important thing. Even again, like, you know, talking about Zebra, like they're getting caned in a few games, but they're always picking up either losing bonus points or kind of try scoring bonus points as well. So
Fair open play.
Yeah, you can't be loose against them.
Yeah.
No, their fullback's exceptional and their winger, like they were two obviously men who really caused Munster problems. Yeah. But where they're actually still naive is actually in the physicality. So if like Munster were very good on their set piece, especially their line out, I think they might have only lost one. So they were exceptional in that, whereas Scarlets had kind of turned over a good few balls. So like they're very good at set piece. So if they can kind of control the game with JJ kicking for territory and getting them into good positions where they can maul Zebre and then again manage when they can split them open and when they can just really punch holes and then get over the line that way. But I see that being definitely a bonus point win, and if they can get another bonus point against one of the South Africans, because they really need to win 4 out of their last 7 anyway, minimum, to be on a chance. I think you're
I was only looking at the table there today and the Welsh sides are in rag order. They're just kind of it's all kind of falling apart for them. I actually saw the Times were reporting that Wasps were making a play to get into the URC if they came back as well. And They could take one of the Welsh sides' place if they want. But it'd be so interesting to watch what happens in the next while, because if the Welsh sides, because it's the first year they're not protected from one having at least one Champions Cup place. Like, so if no Welsh sides get into the Champions Cup next season, you're... I don't know.
Where's their revenue? Where are they going to attract players?
Yeah, they'll be flipping the tables.
There's a strategy coming from the WRU in the next 2 months, so it'll be interesting to see what they focus on.
Just thinking, like the FAI getting a manager. Yeah. It's coming. Just be patient. Yeah.
Anyone want to take
point,
it?
On to Leinster. Like Connacht, they raced into an early lead. Yeah. They had 2 tries after 10 minutes. That game finished 33-20 against Cardiff. They got the job done in the end. Were you impressed by them, Lindsay?
They were kind of fits and starts, you know, like Jason Jenkins had a great block down. Same thing. All the props were like, I don't know what they were on at the weekend. They were on fire. Tom Clarkson took off and again he put Rob Russell through. So it looked really easy. Max Deegan scored his 5th try of the season. Bit of a turn. You know, they were well able to punch holes. Their physicality is definitely different. Like a lot of their second half tries were obviously scored by the props. Michael Milne scored. John McKee scored. So they're well able to bring that physicality. But then on the flip side, they were, you know, 15 unanswered points is not good enough. Cardiff, again, had a great line out on the 5 metre and went to the back and just cut out all of the Leinster defenders. And again, Rhys Carey had 2 tries where he just bundled himself over. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just a case of switching off. But the gas thing is, Leinster just still get the job done. Like, it's still a great away win. I know the Welsh sides aren't great, but, you know, when they decide to turn it on, you know, they're just well
able. And when you think about it, they're missing 19 internationals and they still managed to get the job done, as Lindsay said, and away from home, and they're still sitting comfortably top of the league.
Because they were cruising at the start, and then it looked like it was going to be, because you had Larmour getting
yellow carded
and then they're kind of losing then at half time, but then that's what Leinster did as well. It's like they got them back in the dressing rooms, they refocused them. And they didn't concede until Larmour came back, and then they put them away, and then that maybe deflated them a little bit, and then they kind of they pulled clear at the end as well. But another kind of good challenge for them as well. But yeah, you're kind of saying it's good to see the likes of Milne as well, like who's been, again, like he's been spoken about, like Clarkson has, like you know, these young lads who kind of like maybe because Porter kind of burst through and Sheehan burst through as well. Like you expect that of everybody. But a few of these are kind of like more slowly maturing wines, and we might kind of see them kind of break through.
He had a brilliant performance though, didn't he? Coming off the bench to score 2 tries.
And he probably did go off the boil, you know. And I suppose again, you don't want to be negative about this, because it's like they're young men getting their opportunity and they're taking it. That's the gas thing, you know. And it's all right to switch off in games. Again, it's just what games you switch off, and is it against better opposition where you don't have the luxury of getting back in, or they're not as easy to score the tries, or not as vulnerable as the Welsh sides, who are going through an absolute terrible time and like very much lacking confidence, I'm sure, throughout Welsh rugby from the bottom to the top. But they're young men just taking their opportunities, and there's huge squad rotation again with Leinster. Bit of a break. They have a lot of internationals out. Of all the provinces are probably highly affected, even with their training environment, do you know? So it's, they have a lot more to juggle, but they're well able to get the job done. And it's good to see them.
They haven't lost a game since New Year's Day, and we saw that day how Ulster are able to exploit rush defence that Nina Barr has brought into Leinster. Have you seen progression when it comes to their defence, or is it difficult to see at the moment because we're not seeing this run of game and run of, I suppose, consistency when it comes to team selection as well, with the amount of players that are missing?
Yeah, a little bit like that. Yeah, you probably only start seeing it in, when they all get back as well. But I'm sure he's been running it. Like, it's almost like weirdly enough, when the Six Nations guys come back in, it'll just almost be like, well, we're up to speed now. Now you have to get up to speed with what we're doing as well. So, it's hard to kind of fully tell how it's kind of working as well. But from the talk you're hearing from inside the camp so far is that it is starting to click now, and he is just, his own personal influence is really kind of starting to grow as well. You heard about this when he was down at Munster as well, but you're starting to hear that, like, he's really good in that one-to-one level as well, and kind of giving people stuff and opening people's eyes to other stuff as well. So it is interesting to see how he has made such a positive impact so far, whereas at the same time, I'm seeing Felix Jones. We might come on to that in the Six Nations talk as well, but they're already starting to crib about his kind of blitz defence that he's trying to bring into England then as well. So, they're doing good. I saw as well, is it Maloney might be going off the bat next season
I
as well?
Like this morning.
And then that's what Leinster are real, like that, you have someone like Deeney then that can step in. Mm-hmm. Like, so they're just, it's incredible what they do. Like, even the likes of Russell and Turner, who kind of don't get their luck in with Ireland, but they're just so good whenever they play for Leinster then as well.
There's Osborne, just, another player.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. Well, they'll be back in action. Yes, sorry.
No. Lindsay. Yeah, Jamie Osborne, you forget about him, though he, again, was, you know, he's exceptional. Like, he's just a talent. And, yeah, like we're talking about, you know, Mike Haley would get in, but there's so many players on the fringes.
They just keep churning them out.
Yeah, any other international team, like, they'd be probably like, you don't need him, do you? We'll take him, do you know? So, like, that's the luxury we have. But, yeah, it's a good luxury. You know, it's not a position we're used to being in over the last while, but it's lovely to see. And I was actually down in Kilkenny and past Kilkenny Rugby Club, and I thought there was a match on, but it was actually just young kids. And in my head, I was like, wow, rugby really is in a rich vein of form because of the success of it, because of these absolutely unbelievable role models. And the game is exciting now that, you know, World Rugby have looked at alterations to, you know, the breakdown, the changes, and making the game really, really quick. So it's exciting to play and it's exciting to watch. But they were all, underage kids. And I mean, they were on two pitches, just all spread out.
Brilliant.
So whether it was a blitz with another club, I don't know, but it was just like, it was lovely to see, you know, and it's lovely that in that part where, you have a mixture of kids, you know, with hurling, sort of Eskimo gear hurling, but they're well able to mix it then with rugby as well. So,
well, we'll move on to the big one now, England, Ireland and Twickenham this weekend. Does it sit comfortably with you, Lindsay, that we're overwhelming favourites going into this game?
I'm not surprised. You know, I'm not surprised. I think this is a tricky one because there's probably mixed emotion now floating around with this. Like, I have played England. I've watched England. I think we would be disrespectful of England to not be able to put in a one performance, you know, on the back of their World Cup. So I do think if Ireland play to the level they can play, this won't be an issue for us. This will be a win. We are by far the better team. But I think it's just if you get into a dogfight with them, they could really bring it down. And if they're within, and we saw that in the last round of last year's Grand Slam. You know, they really put it up to us. They really brought the physicality. They got off the line and made it difficult. They made it, you know, really made it awkward at our breakdown. So, you know, they're well able to play. They just haven't got their combinations right. Are they going for a kicking game? But they don't play Freddie Stewart. Are they going to play a passing and quick game? But they haven't had Marcus Smith. So it depends. But, you know, if it comes down to an arm wrestle and it's a bit of a dogfight, you just wouldn't want to get into it because then you're relying on luck or decisions going your way. But as I said, I don't really see it being an issue. But I just think going away to Twickenham is always a difficult place to be. And they're under a lot of pressure themselves, both Steve Borthwick, the players. If they can transfer their success at Europe with what we can see these players do into that one performance into an England jersey, they just haven't, I don't know, transferred it, you know. So, no, as I said, I think there's mixed emotion. I think there are a lot of people out there, you know, this is an exceptional Irish team. But, yeah, it's just not an easy place to go. So, yeah, I'm not surprised. Does it sit comfortably? Yeah, probably about 90%, but it's still, you know, I still wouldn't be so disrespectful in an international test game to just say it's an outright guarantee.
Pat, we actually haven't spoken to you in a few weeks. What have you made of Ireland's performances so far? What has impressed you the most?
Again, just how I think maybe it's the lads slotting in and it's almost seamless, like that. Like Calvin Nash, like, you know, like it's someone like him, even Frawley there, who I thought was maybe in the second half of that game against Wales was probably Ireland's best like attacking player. Mm-hmm. Like he kind of grew into that game as well. Like, so you're nearly everybody who's slotting in. Like Baird came in, you know, to start the game, did really well. Conan came in to start the game. So just the lads who, they just kind of plug into the system. There's so much confidence in what they do. It's fantastic. Like, so that's the main thing has been really good. And then it's a little bit weird. Like the last two home games have been kind of flat enough because like it's a, I suppose it's a thing for Irish people to kind of get used to being favourites and even there, like ahead of the Ireland Wales game, Jamie Roberts said the Irish back row is the best back row in the world, and your instinct is to go, come on now, like, you know, and
we're very Irish. Oh my god, you've jinxed us. What the hell are you doing?
And then just be like, no, come on. And then you kind of looked into it, and I was digging into it a little bit, and it's really just, it's the, because I said Vermeulen's kind of retired now, so then he's out of that South African back row. So it's really just Ireland and New Zealand, probably you would say, are the two best back rows in the world. And then it's kind of been 50-50. But then I think where Ireland have the advantage there is, you have Conan and you have Baird now, and Ireland seems to be favouring the 6-2 split now. So if you think that is like five lads there to like to cover your back row, it's it is funny. Like you kind of look at it in black and white. I was saying World Rugby Player of the Year 2022, Van der Fleer, who's still class. Mm. Caelan Doris is probably going to be the next Lions captain. And then you have Peter O'Mahony, who captained the Lions in 2017 and is still looking great as well. And he's like a line-out machine as well, like in defence and attack. So it's not that strange. And they're such a complete unit then that it's not that strange going to do. So it's this weird thing we have to get used to. But and Farrell doesn't do it from his point of view. Like if you talk all week, he'll talk England up. He'll say how great they are and he won't talk about disrespecting anybody. But yeah, it's this weird seed now that's within us that we're expecting to kind of beat these sides. And so it's a bit strange that way. But I was speaking to Dylan Hartley there, who turned out to be a nice guy. They all turned out to be nice guys. Like, but I was talking to him a couple of weeks ago.
How surprised you are.
I was thinking of wearing an eye patch when I got on the Zoom with him, being like a bastard. Like, but he was really well spoken and kind of said, he was just talking about how England have had red cards in the last, I think, three of their last four games against Ireland. So I think I was talking to him about it and he just said, if they can keep 15 men on the, you know, on the field, they have a chance. Like, so it is something to consider, where they ruffled us last time we played them going for the Grand Slam. So they could do it again now. So they'll be looking to that. I wonder if they'll go back to the kind of World Cup tactic where they played Argentina, where George Ford is dropping back for drop goals and they try and get rough.
Well, that's
and ready
what I'm thinking. Like, yeah. You know, and like we spoke about this in the last show. Like, the penalties aren't an issue until teams start hurting you with penalties or kicking for territory, and that's where I think England could be. Mm. They're definitely more physical if they get in close
and
to
Ireland
our line.
Have conceded the most penalties out of any other team in the Six Nations so far at 37, and that's probably the only stat that they don't sit comfortably on top of. Every other stat, like attack and everything, they're on top, but the penalty count is certainly
like they're history makers. They could go winning if it goes to plan. Like, I mean, bonus point wins in every round. I don't think any team's done that. It'll be a history maker with back to back Grand Slams, and the most points obviously then scored and least probably conceded, I would think. No team had been held scoreless until we did with Italy. So again, these are, I suppose it is, as I said, like at times I'm ruthless, you know, and I would be competitive and I'm still competitive even though I don't play on that team. But, you know, I'm like, no, we, you know, just destroy them. And I suppose that's the expectancy now, which is harsh on players who are still winning and winning well. But I suppose there are times where George Ford is such a good kicker. He's smart. He brings something different. He's not going to bring that open style. But this is the tactic that got him through to a semi-final where they were just putting teams under pressure, winning penalties or getting into position for drop goals. And they were just chipping away. And that's where I'm like, right, if they really make a shit of our breakdown, if they really... Like, Wales did a good job in kind of slowing us, keeping their defensive line good. There was huge clarity around that. But on the flip side, Ireland have huge clarity, whereas actually that's probably the one thing we would say about England. They don't have clarity at times as to who they are, what's their identity, what's their role playing. And obviously Felix Jones, when he gets it right with them, which he will. Mm. But I mean, you don't come into a new company as this... that you're going to revolutionise it and you have a week to do it. I mean, it's still going to take a time, you know, but when they get clarity around that, they will cause teams problems. We just hope that by next weekend they won't have that clarity and they'll still be at sixes and sevens. And if Ireland, to our exception in open play, can look to destroy them and exploit them like Scotland did. So I think all in all, we are favourites. I absolutely have no doubt we're going to win, but, you know, we want to go and beat the old enemy and beat them well.
How much is Twickenham a factor, or does it come into play at all, considering that Ireland have had success there in recent times? Does that kind of nullify the hostile crowd?
It used to almost, after they won the World Cup in 2003, used to almost play into Ireland's hands, where like they wanted to go there. And there's the famous story of like England used to have all their, I think they had 19 or 17 test victories in a row, and it was on the walk up the tunnel. And when Ireland beat him in 2004, an Irish guy got a marker and writ on the wall, like the result of the thing, like one of the Irish players did it. Like, and so they were that aware of this kind of like the kind of history around them as well. But
we're chasing that record now, are we not?
Yeah,
if we get this win, I think we set a new record. Now, I could be wrong with that. For most consecutive wins.
Oh, maybe in the Six Nations. Yeah, it could be, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
in the Six Nations.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is that kind of thing. But there is a side where if they get on top of you, like there is often a very good atmosphere there. a lot of people drinking in the concourse beforehand. Like, it's always, it seems a bit larrier than
it's like a village, isn't it? When you go, like, I've played there, and like they are around. It's like, yeah, it's like an Olympic village. So there's lots of people go early. The streets are filled.
Big tents all set up outside of people all drinking beforehand.
So there's an awful lot of good atmosphere. So yeah, you can feel that kind of
vibe. If they get on top of you, that's where it can go against you. Like, I've been there a few times. Like, I remember Delan and Van der Fleer. That was 2016, and there was some poor game where Vunipola ran over Trimble and stuff like that. And when they get on top of you, then like under Ennie Jones, when they were at their pomp, like, it was a tough place to go. But you could kind of see now that if Ireland can kind of do, Joe Schmidt used to do it sometimes. I remember they won the Grand Slam. If like Ireland get off to what they love doing, those quick starts where they get ahead, then it can turn against them, and the pressure is on England even more. So, that first 20 minutes is going to be crucial.
Yeah. How would both teams have used the break week now? It was probably no harm that Ireland had a bit of a dip in performance against Wales to have stuff to work on ahead of this game.
Yeah, I think both teams will have used the week to really get their teams, like, let them recoup, which was a big thing. I think the lads were off till the Wednesday, came in for just 2 days and got the weekend off again, so it was good for them to have downtime. But I think both teams will have a lot of video reviews to review their last performance, where they were weak, where they need improvements. But they will be certainly now doing previews to where, you know, the opposition is weak. So I can see England really looking at, they've been most consistent with their selections other than injuries. I think Alex Matthews,
Alex Mitchell and Marcus Smith are back in the squad.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see.
Well, it'll be interesting what selection they go to, but he has been conservative by picking forward at 10. But yet wants to play this expansive rugby. So again, they have to pick their identity and they have to stick with it. And I think that's another point. Twickenham is a tough place to go. If you start off well, like we did against France, then the crowd go against them. And I think the English can follow suit with that. You know, they are a crowd who are now looking for answers off Borthwick and his team. They're asking to back up, you know, action what you're telling us, but you're not doing it. So it'll be interesting to see. And at this stage, they've two big guns coming. They've obviously us and then they've France in the last round, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
So they need to put in performances to win that crowd back and kind of say, yeah, we're on a trajectory here that's going to bring us success, because if they don't, I think heads could roll.
Yeah, would the English support be more, I suppose, accepting of where England are at if they were to lose, but if they have shown signs of change?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think they would.
Or if they go back to their reductive style of play that we saw at the World Cup and beat Ireland?
Oh, if they won, yeah. No matter how they win, they wouldn't mind. But yeah, if they lose and they play exciting rugby and they kind of... Because it was a little bit like that against Scotland. The result was all that really mattered to them. And as I said, there's already kind of seems to be leaks coming out from the camp about... some of their players are concerned, or it's got back to maybe agents or, you know, whoever else, or maybe players are speaking directly as sources, but they're concerned that they're spending too much time focusing on defence rather than attack, and that's where they think it's all breaking down for them.
So are they losing patience? Because I thought they had a bit of patience of what Felix Jones was trying to do, that it was clear what they are trying to implement in defence, but we're still unsure what they're trying to do in attack.
Yeah, it's a little bit like that. So then maybe they're feeling a little bit of the heat. So then it's getting back that, well, we don't really spend that much time in attack. Okay. Like, you know, and that's where... Whereas, as you guys mentioned when Johnny was on the show last week as well, like, what is it, 30-something handling errors against Scotland? Like, you can't equate for that kind of stuff as well. Like, but... So maybe they're not they're unsure about what they're doing, apart from maybe in the first 10 or 15 minutes of a game where they know what the game plan is. But then when it gets loose... There's nobody really calling the shots for them then, or, you know, like a Sexton or something like that, to kind of be an on-field leader and say, here's what we're doing, and kind of get them back on script as well. So, the English public, it'll be fascinating to see, because they were slowly going in the right direction. Like, Borthwick's very keen to stress that, like, we only have so many training sessions together. Like, if it goes against them, like, and if they lose to France then as well, it gets so nasty, because that's what even Johnny was kind of saying. He knows what it's like over there. It's like results are all that really matter. And there's this aspirational goal, like me taking a banana from the kitchen every day. I may want to eat that banana, but I may go home and not eat the banana as well.
Look at that for an analogy.
Yeah, I call it my aspirational banana. England want to play this brilliant rugby, but their own base instinct is to kind of put it up the, stick it up the guts and kind of.
Enda just said that's the worst analogy he's ever heard in his life.
I was like, that's so abstract, I don't really get that.
I'm not really sure where you're going with the banana, but.
There's a few possible edits for Enda here. I'm kind of having a look at him.
I think there's, I'm not sure that's aspiration if there's a really, like a large amount quantity in that bunch. You know what I mean?
Maybe
if
we'll move on from left. Bananas.
I kind of, like, I kind of, because I'll take, yeah, I could expand on it, but maybe in, we'll do like a kind of bonus episode where I kind of expand on this.
Listen, take banana. Your votes now if you wish to hear more about the aspiration of banana. I think it would be, this is where you see, I feel the pressure is on. If, it, like, it would be all forgiving from English fans.
See, if that's
they
what
could
I mean.
If Ireland. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And this is where I think the pressure's on. I think they're going to come all guns blazing. Whatever squad they decide, if they think, right, we have to answer questions here. This is for the, you know, the red rose. This is what we want to do for this jersey and this people and show people we can still play rugby. That they will do it in the home of English rugby. Like, they still are a hugely proud nation. Like, they will not be happy though they're in transition. And I think it's really naive of people to think that you just are on the, you're on the foundation of a new cycle. And I know this is like, people are like, this is boring. It's not. You have to try things. You have to set out new stalls, but you can't just all of a sudden complete your attack and your defence. No. If you focus on defence, that's great. But what's the nature of your turnovers? Are you getting turnovers from knock-ons? Are you winning at source? Are you winning gain line?
They've won the most turnovers in the competition, but it's what they're doing
exactly.
with that ball.
Exactly. So you can only tweak it. Do you know, are we like turnover possession where it's still live ball? Is it two passes and we're trying to attack the wings? What is your attack policy off those turnovers? Are you kicking for territory? That's where you might need your George Fords, who's a really good kicker. But if it's off live ball, then you want your Marcus Smith in open play, who's comfortable.
Will he make changes?
In
Do you
that
see
chaos?
Him making the changes that people are calling out for? Like, they want to see Marcus Smith in there. They want to see Alex Mitchell.
I think it's very unfair. Yeah, but I think it's very unfair now in round four with Marcus Smith not having played, because the nature of Marcus Smith is when he's on, he's absolutely brilliant. But he can be a bit like Finn Russell, where if it's turnovers and you give it to this world-class Irish team and turnover ball in open play, then you're really leaving yourself exposed to that loss and some really easy scores. So I can see them probably sticking to the squad more or less.
Okay.
You know, and then if it really is
he's
a chance.
He's played fullback before, hasn't he? Didn't we see him at fullback at
Smith,
times?
Yeah.
In the World Cup. But they'll probably go with Furbank again.
Furbank, yeah. And then, it's mad to see Stewart kind of falling out of favour.
Which is bizarre.
Isn't it? Like,
yeah, I think it's bizarre.
You could see, Smith probably go on the bench or something like that. And Mitchell, if they're both fit, I thought they were both out of the Six Nations when I heard about their injuries. But, like, unless
Mitchell was knee, wasn't it, after the last round?
Yeah, so, like, but, yeah, I could see Ford. I can't see him changing too much. It's funny to see what's going on. Like, I think Andy Good was, like, he wanted 8 changes. Like, you know, like, I don't think it's going to be.
Why would you 8 change? It's not like it's. I can understand that there's nothing to play for. Like, 2 weeks ago was talk of winning the championship, and now you're coming in the, you know, two of the top 4 teams in the world. Do you know, they're your last 2 rounds. Like, I mean, that's not, you can't change at this stage. You got to stick to the game plan that you've stuck with so far. I would have Marcus Smith on the bench, and if it does open up and that's the style of game that it ends up being, bring him off the bench. But you have to stay in with Ireland, because if we get the good start, you know, that's where they're going to be on the back foot. But if they can stay conservative and stay with Ireland for a certain period of time, then bring on this exciting Marcus Smith, who's great footwork, who has no inhibitions and could really open Ireland up. I don't see it, but, you know, you just don't know what way the game is going to go. So, yeah, I don't see too many changes now, to be honest. They can't. They can't really at this stage.
Will Ireland make any tweaks to the way they've been attacking? We know how effective their short passing game has been and how much pressure it puts defences under. But will we see more of an attacking kicking game from Ireland to exploit that rush defence? Andy Farrell was saying after the Welsh game that they were a bit passive at times in their attack.
Well, the way you'd beat that blitz defence is really deep off your second line attack, which we can see. We have seen that in the way they set up, or absolutely kick into territory. So I suppose it depends who is. We see a lot more box kicks. Is, you know, Crowley, who's well able to get those kicks in, the little dinks that we saw from Frawley. So they're well able to play, but I think they've the most short passes of any team in the tournament. Yeah. So I think they'll mix it up, and probably they'll have done their preview to see where they can exploit it. But I think you'll have a mix of a lot of things now. We'll see what's working for them. And I think they'll have all options on really for them. But that blitz defence, I can see them using the.
Why is it so hard for teams to defend against that short passing game?
because you see, you've no, there's no air, like the ball isn't long in the air time. So if you see that, I used to hate from, especially in the women's game, you'd see it because from 10 to, if I was top of the ball, the ball is in the air so long, it just gives that, it buys the defence, it suits the defence to come off the line, because once the ball's in the air, they can move. So it suits them. Whereas the short passes, they can't get that momentum. So you're just punching holes and winning game line, and that's where it's really, really key. And I can see Ireland using that and really keeping England narrow, because they've been exploited out wide. Do you know, for that Bliss defence, no more than Leinster is, it's really, really quick, but it's really, really narrow. So if it's played well and deep out the back, punching holes in and get the ball out that second line of attack, they can exploit them out wide. And we've seen Calvin Nash, when he's being called on and he might be in games, he's really, really quick. He's really transferred that form from Munster into Ireland, and he's had a great start for me. He's been a great find this Six Nations, and I know he's one of the ones I will take credit that I wanted to see in the squad, because he's been deserving, like, and he's been so consistent since he's just gotten consistent game time, really.
Team selection for Ireland, a few decisions to be made. Hugo Keenan and Gary Ringrose are back fit. Does Ringrose come back in, or are we looking at Aki Henshaw again?
Yeah,
and could Ringrose be a bench option? Like, how is he going to play this?
I spoke to Ringrose was up last week doing media stuff, or PR stuff, I should say, and promoting milk, and which is nature's sports drink.
Have you another story about this?
No, that's the.
Do you drink milk when you eat your bananas?
Yes, sometimes. But yeah, he was kind of saying that he's like looking just to get back in now. I would have maybe thought if he was going to come back in, he might come in against Wales. But he must have had a more serious injury than was first kind of reported as well, because he said he did a shoulder against Leicester, I think. And so it'd be interesting to see if he comes back in, especially with Henshaw like doing so well. I don't see him coming back in, but he did speak about how he'd play on the wing, and like nearly everybody's having to see that, like, if you want to get in Farrell's squad now, you have to be versatile. Like, even you saw McCluskey playing on the right wing there in the last game. So Ringrose is saying, I'll play wherever I'm needed. Like, you know, I can cover if I'm needed, because Henshaw's doing so well. So I can see them doing 6-2 again. I can see Keenan coming back in. I can see Frawley going back onto the bench. And then, yeah, maybe Ringrose missing out. Like, and hardly any other changes apart from that, I'd say.
So the same bench then, Frawley and McCluskey?
Frawley back on the bench then, for this one, and then Keenan back in the team. So
6-2, so then you'd have the backup probably Murray.
So that's kind of my
So you'd have Murray and Frawley.
Which would then kind of leave someone like Ringrose out as well. Like, so it's that's just kind of my sense from maybe here early in the week to the way it might be. But that's it. The other bit I was going to say when you're talking about it was, I think you guys mentioned as well, it'd be interesting to see, because England are definitely going to be looking to get after Porter again. I was thinking, would they get away? Would O'Mahony get away with the old elbow shove as well? Is that even...
No,
would
don't.
England be pointing that out to the refs as well ahead of that game? Yeah.
And I think, like, so we saw obviously Alex... Ellis Genge, the last time we had a poor performance in Twickenham, and we lost, I'd say it's 2 years ago now, and we got an absolute whopping, that they targeted the scrum and there was dark arts. And when you're on the back foot, and obviously now Porter has been, you know, under the spotlight, and he did exceptionally against Wales. We probably didn't reap the rewards. We should have been rewarded a lot more at the scrum time, but I think they will look to probably target O'Mahony and give him a little bit of a poke, by the sounds of it. I think they'll do the same with Porter, who obviously had like a Joe Marler moment the last day with Robin Boots and, you know, pushing people and all the rest. So, I can see them just trying to wind Ireland up. So it'll be and this is the thing, it's just going to be the mental side of Ireland's game. It's not going to be about the performance or the preparation. It'll just be what way they're going to try and just really negate all the... And look, there's so many ways Ireland can play. Like, we just said it there, their passing game, how wide they can set off, the short passes, just chipping away, kick for territory, grubber kick over the top. Like, there's so many options they have, but it'll just be the referee, the rub the green, our breakdown will be key, our set piece will be key. Like, we cannot have line out. Like, Itoje will rub... Will target, like, they will target our lineup.
They often do that, definitely. At Twickenham as well.
Yeah.
So how will this game play out? How do you see it going? Will Ireland have a comfortable win in the end, do you think?
I think, weirdly enough, I think it could be their closest game of the Six Nations, but I still think they could still win by over 10 points if they kind of get everything right. They're just, they would surprise you. Like, they're just so good, like that, and they're so ruthless as well, in a way where, like, they have something else that, whatever on, like, message they're being told ahead of things, they're going out looking to create history here. It's not just get wins, like, so they've been told that they're on the verge of something special. So I kind of think that they'll be very much up for this game. So it'd be interesting to see. I think the bench as well is so strong for Ireland that could make a big difference for them, like the likes of, like, Healy and Murray and stuff like that coming on and make a big impacts. So yeah, I think they'd probably win by 10 points.
I think 6-2 split, I agree with. I think Ireland will absolutely switch on, and I think this could be probably their most consistent performance, and I do think they'll win by 15. But as I said, I think it won't be an easy 15, but 15, yeah, definitely.
I will end on that positivity. We'll leave it there for today's show. My thanks to Lindsay and to Pat. We'll be back on House of Rugby next week. We're going to leave you with an interview that Pat did with Hugo Keenan during the week. Until next week, from all of us here, Slán go fóill.
Hugo, how's it going?
Good.
The first thing I was going to say to you was I have to apologise to you because I've been telling people and I've been writing in articles that you're from Kildare.
Okay, interesting. Hadn't gotten back to me.
And
so,
then people have got back and said, I think it's actually, word is spreading now and it's all my fault. And I went back and I realised that this was all down to me. I think it's because you're friends with a couple of the Kildare lads or something like that. But
True. They've managed to grab me. Will Connors, Jimmy. So, no, proud dub.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And what about yourself? Like, even your own background, was it always rugby for you growing up? Like, you were in Blackrock as well. Like, did you any other sports there?
No, definitely wasn't all rugby. I suppose my first love was definitely football, soccer. So, played with the local side, Mount Marion, until I was about 17. And then I wasn't very good at rugby at an early age, playing for the C's and D's in Blackrock, sort of working my way up slowly. And I only really got to my last year in school in Blackrock, where I made the SET team, to sort of start pushing on, where I had to stop the football and focus on that. And it's been a bit of a long journey since then, bit of a windy road through the academy, through sevens, but wouldn't change it.
Yeah, and like for yourself, you come across like a guy who's kind of laid back as well. Like, you know, you have other lads who kind of seem like a bit like extra driven as well, I suppose. But do you have that kind of inner drive within yourself, like to kind of push on? Like, you clearly do if you've kind of made it to this level as well.
I'd like to think I do. I think everybody probably in the Irish squad does. I think you have to have it. It's a competitive group. I think even in your provinces, it's full of competitive natured people. And I think you have to have that drive to sort of kick on. I think it's important to try be as laid back as possible sort of outside of rugby to try and enjoy those times. So it's striking the right balance is always the tough thing.
Yeah, and we were saying they're just gone at the weekend, like it was busy enough. You had the League Cup and you had all the Six Nations as well. You were saying you maybe only got a chance to see some of the highlights at DuPont as well, but what do you kind of think of, I could even see the media interest in that is really ramped up because he's got involved. What do you think about the idea of sevens lads getting involved in the kind of, or like 15s lads getting involved in the sevens this year?
Yeah, it's been great for, I suppose, the sevens program and the spotlight he's put on it. I know my Instagram feed was covered in a few of his highlights, and he seemed to hit the ground running. I'd no doubt that he would. I think Michael Hooper, I'm not sure if he played, but he's not far off joining the Australia squad. I suppose there's been a lot of people who've gone from sevens to 15s, like myself. But you don't see it too often the other way around. I know when I played in the Sevens World Cup back in, I think it was 2018 or 2017 in San Francisco, a few of the Fijian boys came back, the likes of Nakawara and Tuisova, Radradra even. So I think they were probably the first to do it, but it's good that it's getting a bit more popular and lads are starting to get pulled in by the dream of the Olympics.
Sports Show presents House of Rugby.